This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
White House on the defensive. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, May 16. Glad you're with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
The Washington Post quotes anonymous sources who say President Trump shared intelligence secrets about ISIS with Russian officials. Hear how the administration is responding.
Experts say there are signs that North Korea is behind the global ransomware attack. They say there's circumstantial evidence of the Lazarus Group.
The United States is accusing Syria of using a crematorium to carry out mass executions at a prison.
And how even the experts have trouble figuring out the student loan system.
It's complicated. There are a lot of options. It's great that the government, you know, is trying to make it easier for people to repay their loans, but there's so many different choices that sometimes it can seem overwhelming. So even people who are, you know, who are really trying their best to do their research, might have trouble kind of wading through what option is best for them.
Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman on how complicated the student loan system has become. She's here in about 20 minutes. The Washington Post is reporting that President Trump revealed highly classified information from a close U.S. ally about Islamic State terrorists. National Security Advisor, though, H.R. McMaster, says reports from the Washington Post and others are false.
At no time were intelligence sources or methods discussed. And the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known.
Also reacting, Arizona Senator John McCain.
I'm not going to jump to any conclusion until we get the facts, as much as I trust the Washington Post, the unimpeachable source.
The Post says Mr. Trump jeopardized a critical source of intelligence on ISIS in his conversations last week with the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador to the U.S. They say Mr. Trump offered details about an ISIS terror threat related to the use of laptop computers on aircraft. Meanwhile, legal analysts and secrecy experts say American presidents have broad authority to disclose classified information, making them virtually immune from prosecution. Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
Every other government employee with a clearance could face criminal charges for disclosing classified information without prior permission, but USA Today says the commander-in-chief has the power to unilaterally disclose anything without a formal process. Still, if it's true, Mr. Trump's decision has possible serious consequences, like allies potentially no longer sharing intel. Also, violations of intelligence sharing agreements are subject to sanctions from individual countries, and Congress could pursue impeachment if the president's actions are determined as reckless. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 9 minutes after the hour. Cybersecurity researchers have identified a digital clue connecting the global ransomware assault to previous cyber attacks by a group linked to North Korea. But researchers caution that the evidence is not proof that Pyongyang is responsible for the malware known as WannaCry. The link involves a version of the software used in the latest attack that was detected earlier this year and uploaded to an archive for security researchers. Here's Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert.
This particular malware and the three reported variants that we've seen since are all fixable with patch.
He says the highest levels of government continue to monitor developments.
It appears that less than $70,000 has been paid in ransoms, and we are not aware if payments have led to any data recovery.
Meanwhile, experts say the findings don't necessarily demonstrate that North Korea was involved in the attack. For example, the Wall Street Journal says the culprits in the latest attack who have not been identified could have copied the code in question. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. President Trump has headlined four big rallies in the first months of his presidency to tout his agenda and savage his foes. A new $1.5 million television ad campaign promotes his accomplishments and attacks the media. The flurry of activity to build support for Mr. Trump's policies isn't organized by the White House, but springs from his re-election campaign. Wait, what re-election campaign, you ask? Here's Frederica Scouten, campaign finance reporter at USA Today. Frederica, what's up here?
Well, one of the things that has been really interesting about Trump is that he filed for re-election formally with the Federal Election Commission the day he was inaugurated. That is highly unusual. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama all waited until they'd been president for more than 2 years before they filed their re-election paperwork. Now, there's some practical reasons. He was bringing in money, and so he needed to sort of legally say, all right, I have a campaign re-election committee. But he's also really innovating here. He has, the campaign committee is the sponsor of the four rallies he's held so far in the first months of his presidency. They launched a $1.5 million campaign ad to promote his accomplishments. He is acting like someone who is running, even though he's not formally announced. And one of the things that the folks on his team say is that this really helps him project, I'm going to quote here, the power and authority of the presidency. And it is a way to exhibit to Democrats and Republicans that he is a force to be reckoned with. So he's really using the campaign apparatus to advance his issues.
That's interesting. So what does that mean for rallies? Because did you point out in the story he can pick and choose who attends at times, depending on who funds it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. As you know, if it's a campaign, if it's just like a sort of event funded by taxpayers, right, you would think everybody would be allowed in. Now, his campaign insists that they don't try to restrict anyone, but we've seen at a number of the rallies, protesters have been removed, and that's something that's, you know, perfectly allowable if it's a private event funded by the campaign. He can also sell his merchandise at the event, which is another source of campaign money. And everyone who comes has to get a ticket. And by getting a ticket, you give your name, you give your physical address, you give your email address, so folks know who you are. And importantly, they can contact you in the future, whether it's about supporting the president's agenda, if he's in a fight with folks on Capitol Hill, and they can also ask them for donations.
We're speaking with USA Today campaign finance reporter Frederica Scouten. She's written a piece entitled President Trump Seizes on Election Rules to Push His Agenda in New Ways. All right, so that's interesting then. What could this approach by Mr. Trump mean for the midterm elections a year and a half from now?
Well, you know, I mean, he is also helping to raise money for the Republican National Committee, and they had a gangbuster first quarter, the best first quarter that they had after a presidential election in party history. And I think you're going to see a lot of money flowing in. I mean, between Trump and the joint fundraising committees with the RNC and the RNC's own accounts, they raised $53 million in the first quarter of the year. So if they keep up that pace, they'll be at $200 million by the end of this year and, you know, $400 million in, you know, by the midterm. So they're going to have money to really support Republicans in the Senate and in the House. And, you know, President Trump has made no secret of the fact that he would like to have bigger majorities in the Senate. And the calendar this year is not terribly favorable to Democrats seeking re-election in the Senate.
So I think somebody in the story said this could be the new blueprint for presidents. Is this the new strategy, perhaps?
Potentially. I mean, I think in every election cycle, we see folks pushing the envelope. You remember back in the days before we had super PACs, and then there were super PACs, and then each presidential candidate had to have his or her own personal super PAC, and then donors had to have their super PACs. This could be a new trend. The other thing it does, it sends an early warning to competitors. I mean, if you are thinking about challenging him in a primary, or you're a Democrat who is thinking about challenging him, you're already behind.
Frederica Scouten, campaign finance reporter at USA Today. It's 20 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, U.S. officials say President Trump disclosed highly classified information to Russia's foreign minister about a planned Islamic State operation, plunging the White House into another controversy just months into Trump's short tenure in office. The intelligence, shared at a meeting last week with Russia's foreign minister and ambassador, was supplied by a U.S. ally. But the White House declared the allegations, first reported by the Washington Post, incorrect. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster.
There's nothing that the president takes more seriously than the security of the American people. The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false. The president and the foreign minister reviewed a range of common threats to our two countries, including threats to civil aviation.
California Congressman Ted Lieu.
The president just weakened U.S. national security, and he's made it much more difficult for allies to want to share information with us. He's put people's lives at risk, and this is absolutely a dereliction of duty.
Sources say the information was considered so sensitive that some details had been withheld from U.S. allies and was restricted within the U.S. government. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in Seattle pressed attorneys for the Trump administration and the state of Hawaii yesterday on whether President Trump's statements, both as a candidate and as president, render his revised travel ban unconstitutional, and whether Trump has disavowed his call for a Muslim ban. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals heard similar legal arguments last week in a separate case challenging the ban. It's likely the case will eventually be decided by the Supreme Court. Well, it isn't the first time a comedian has been accused of stealing a joke from someone else, but it's one of the few times that an accusation like this has ended up in court. A federal judge in Los Angeles has refused to toss a lawsuit that claims Conan O'Brien swiped jokes from a comedian who posted his one-liners online. Robert Caseberg says after he posted punchlines about Caitlyn Jenner, Tom Brady, and the Washington Monument, O'Brien used the same jokes on his TBS show.
Uh-oh. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The complexity of the student loan system, which includes both federal and private loans, countless repayment programs with varying risks and benefits, and severe consequences for mistakes, has left many student loan borrowers confused. Even more troubling, difficulty navigating the student loan repayment process often puts borrowers at risk of financial strain. Even people who put out some of the rules have trouble. I can't imagine what that means for the rest of us. Here's MarketWatch personal finance reporter Jillian Berman. Jillian, what did you find?
So, you know, one of the most interesting is someone who, she's the director of what's called the Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. So that means she helps student loan borrowers, particularly low-income borrowers, manage their loans, and she advocates for policy to make it easier for these people to manage their student loans. She knows everything about student loan law, or, you know, basically as much as there is to know. And yet, when she was trying to switch repayment programs, her servicer, which is the company that manages your debt, caused her to fall into delinquency for a little bit. It took months and months and months for her to switch repayment programs. So even though she, you know, was armed with as much information, honestly, as anybody could have, she still had trouble.
Jeez, why is it this way?
So there are a few reasons. A big one that advocates and some consumer protection, you know, organizations and even, you know, law enforcement officials point to are student loan servicers. So those are the companies that you make your student loan payments to. And if you have a federal student loan, the government has hired these companies and they pay them a lot of money to manage your loans. And federal student loan borrowers have access to a lot of repayment programs under the law that are supposed to help them manage their debt. What a lot of people in the sort of consumer protection community say is that these companies don't do a good enough job telling borrowers about their options, helping them get into sustainable repayment programs, things like that. And so that can really exacerbate a lot of the challenges that borrowers may have repaying their loans.
We're speaking with Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. She's written a piece entitled, "The Student Loan System is So Complicated, Even the Experts Have Trouble Figuring It Out." Boy, you pointed out during the story, in pretty clear terms, that if you can't advocate for yourself, pick up the phone, ask questions, send emails, demand responses, I mean, you might be paying money that you're not supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, even student loan servicers themselves say part of the problem, part of the reason that people are struggling is because they don't reach out to us. But even, you know, what I found from my reporting, with sort of typical borrowers, and then even more so with, you know, talking to these experts, is that if you don't know exactly what to say, or exactly what repayment program you want, or things like that, it might be hard for you to get it. So, you know, it's really important to do your research, to try to have a good understanding of what repayment program or what option is best for you, so that when you pick up the phone and you call your student loan servicer, you can say, this is what I need. Please help me get into it.
Boy, that's a great example. It sounds like healthcare. Like, if you don't know what to ask, you're already behind the eight ball.
Right, exactly. And another big issue with, you know, with the student loan system is it's complicated. There are a lot of options. It's great that the government, you know, is trying to make it easier for people to repay their loans, but there's so many different choices that sometimes it can seem overwhelming. So even people who are, you know, who are really trying their best to do their research, you know, might have trouble kind of wading through what option is best for them.
Thanks, Jillian. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Jillian Berman. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for 3 straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Glad you're with us on this Tuesday, May 16. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The Washington Post says Trump provided classified intel to Russian officials. The administration denies it. President of the Czech Republic says he was just joking when he spoke about, quote, liquidating journalists. Under the law, a 10-year-old girl in India may be forced to give birth even though her stepfather repeatedly raped her. Anheuser-Busch InBev has a plan to make beers like Budweiser fresher. The NBA draft lottery is this evening. And a Wisconsin cop who is now a hero to an 8-year-old boy. That story in about 20 minutes. Seems American farmers are adapting the Jim Valvano approach. Survive and advance. Intense heat waves, droughts, and floods have led to erratic yields just about everywhere in the U.S. Expecting that trend to continue, farmers big and small are investing in ways to preserve water in their soil, plant crops more quickly, and irrigate more efficiently. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon in Chicago. Heather, set the scene.
So for the last, I'd say, decade or so, volatile weather or big swings in temperatures and also moisture has really created a lot of havoc for farmers. So 2012 really seemed to be a pivotal year for this when there was widespread droughts across much of the farm belt that really impacted farmers, where they lost significant amounts of their crops. And for a lot of farmers, you know, they've just seen the impacts of real shifting volatile weather firsthand, so they've had to adapt. So farmers are looking at all kinds of technologies, some very traditional, like no-till farming, to much more technologically sophisticated ways to try to preserve their crops. One Michigan researcher I talked to is developing a system to mist apple trees, cherry trees, other fruit trees, so that if there's a situation where there's a big swing in temperatures, this thing can try to preserve a really important chilling cycle that these crops have to go through before harvest and the growth cycle begins. So there's a lot of variety really happening here.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. She's written a piece called Farmers Scramble to Adapt to Volatile Weather. I think what strikes me is just how every region is affected. You know, it's not just the California drought. It's there's problems in Michigan and Illinois to the southeast in Georgia and Florida. I mean, every farmer everywhere, it seems, needs to do something.
Yeah, California's gotten a lot of the attention, and certainly the drought between 2011 and last year was really terrible. But now California has swung in such a extreme other direction as getting too much water. And you just see these shifts all over the country. In the Midwest, where I'm based, there's been real temperature swings that have really devastated, apple growers who, again, they need their trees to be dormant for a certain period of time before they start blooming, because if there's a sudden swing in the temperature the other way, from warm temperatures back to cold, then they will lose their crops. And you just see this over and over again. Berry farmers in Tennessee, all kinds of, there's been a lot of flooding issues in North Carolina. Even maple syrup has been impacted in growing regions. So it's become sort of a universal issue. The thing is, each remedy can be very selective based on the crop and based on the temperature concerns.
Is volatility the new norm? Is that what they're anticipating?
That's what farmers are starting to believe. Yeah, that they've just seen year after year of these temperature swings, moisture swings, from drought to heat, and it can be subtle from year to year, but when you just add up the sum total of these, they realize that this is not something that's going to go away and that they have to prepare.
Do they have the money to invest in some of this new technology, or is that driving some just out of business?
Well, these are real factors. I mean, they have to look at whether this investment is worth it, but nor is losing all their crops. So for some of the weaker players, yes, they may go out of business because of this, but for some of the stronger players, and some who maybe are a little more technologically savvy, they will invest.
Thanks, Heather. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon in Chicago. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter, too, @GordonDeal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning. And you know what I noticed here in just looking over your script?
Yes.
I mean, you can't miss. We're going to talk about a dog that everybody likes and beer.
Right.
I mean, we just end the show right here after this report. There's no need to go on.
Playing the favorites. Got to play with the people like. Good morning. Well, a Texas dog, Gordon, is the toast of Twitter after a neighbor snapped a picture of him perched on his owner's home and a note explaining that he isn't in danger. Huckleberry, an Austin dog, now known to the internet as Huck the Roof Dog, came to Twitter's attention when a woman spotted him sitting on the roof of his owner's home and snapped some pictures. She tweeted out the pictures, which included a photo of a sign the home's human residents posted to ease the fears of witnesses who might think the dog is in danger. It reads, "Don't be alarmed. Huckleberry's living up to his name and learning how to jump on our roof from the backyard. We never leave him in the backyard without someone being at home. He will not jump unless you entice him with some food or a ball." It goes on to say, "We appreciate your concern, but please do not knock on our door. We know he's up there." Huck's viral fame led to his owners getting him an Instagram account, which Gordon now has over 20,000 followers.
Is that right? That's
yes.
Funny.
Yeah, and just pictures of Huck just laying around and up on the roof and stuff.
He's a beautiful dog, too, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny. He just likes the roof.
He just likes hanging out there.
I mean, you could just read his mind as people are walking by taking pictures. He's like, "What's up? What's up? This is my roof.
Yeah.
What? Why are you looking at me? I live here."
Here's what I'm thinking. Can he clean the gutters while he's up there?
Right.
Because I'd hire him to do that.
The roof looks really clean, I must say. He does a lot of licking and cleaning while he's up there or something.
We might have to figure
funny
this
pictures.
Out.
Funny pictures.
And a beer vendor, Gordon, at Philadelphia Phillies games no longer sounds like Marlon Brando in a streetcar named Desire.
Hey, Stella!
Tom McGee told local TV that he has stopped yelling Stella at the top of his lungs because stadium vendor Aramark is now having him sell Yingling Lager instead. He used to yell Stella because he was hawking Stella Artois, a Belgian beer that's been replaced by the vendor. McGee's been a vendor at Citizens Bank Park for 9 years. He says fans ask him at least 25 times a game, "Where's the Stella?" He says he had some fun on the opening Sunday yelling, "Not Stella," but these days he simply shouts Yingling Lager with the accent on the second word. McGee says the Yingling sells a little better than the Stella, but it's not as much fun to yell.
Ah, well, Yingling is from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And this is Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. So
there you go. Yeah, almost every ballpark seems to have, baseball especially, seems to have that vendor that everybody knows. That that kind of makes everybody chuckle when they walk by. And let me tell you something. Selling beer at a baseball game, one of the hardest things you can do sort of at one of those jobs. I mean, it's probably the heaviest thing to carry around,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
carrying
true.
Around an entire case of you know, probably 24 or 30 beers. That's probably one of the hardest of those vendor type jobs. So you know, good for him.
It's a good point. And having worked in the minor league baseball system before, right? It's better than cotton candy. I'm sorry, it's heavier than cotton candy or popcorn. Yeah.
So that's you know.
To your point, though, those metal hot dog containers.
Yeah. Those are probably pretty heavy,
too,
I guess.
Can't be a picnic, either.
No, and there's water in there, usually.
Hot water.
Right.
Sloshing around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I always have great respect for that. Going up and down those inclined stairs, not falling down. Because I'd fall down on the first minute of my first day.
But it's much more of a violation to spill a beer than it would be to lose a little water in the hot dog container.
Yes, party foul for sure.
Right. Especially at a baseball game. Thanks, Mike. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to a report in the Washington Post, President Trump revealed highly classified intelligence to Russia's foreign minister and ambassador last week. The extremely sensitive information was gathered by a U.S. ally united in the fight against ISIS and given on the basis that it remained private between the two parties. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are reacting to the news, including California Congresswoman Ninette Bargarone.
The president has the ability to unclassify information, and so we know that. But it is awfully dangerous to our national security when he is giving an advantage to Russia.
National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster denied on behalf of the White House that Trump shared the reported classified intelligence.
I was in the room. It didn't happen.
Just last week, lawmakers called into question Trump's relationship with Russia after he fired FBI Director James Comey. Meanwhile, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has agreed to brief the full Senate on Thursday on Comey's firing. That briefing is classified. Moderate senators from both parties met last night to explore whether they can work on bipartisan legislation overhauling the nation's health care system. But there seems little chance that the group would produce a package that will become the Senate's chief bill, at least until Republicans have exhausted efforts to produce their own legislation. Cybersecurity firms say clues point to a link between a hacking group connected to North Korea and the ransomware attacks that have crippled computer systems worldwide. Experts at Symantec found that earlier versions of the ransomware known as WannaCry were found on computers that also bore evidence of the cyber tools used against Sony Pictures Entertainment, as well as banks in Poland and Bangladesh's central bank, attacks that were all linked to North Korea. Well, it took seven games that the Celtics have advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals after beating the Wizards last night, 115-105. Isaiah Thomas scored a team-high 29.
The players on this team, from the first guy to last guy, we believe in each other. And we never give up, and we feel like we're just as good as any team in the NBA.
Well, for those efforts, the Celtics get to take on the reigning champion Cavaliers, who have yet to lose a playoff game this season.
I know Isaiah Thomas went crazy. This Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, he had a pretty good game.
This is a funny headline in Deadspin. It says, the Wizards are dead and Kelly Olynyk killed them. The Celtics, by the way, could get the number one pick in the lottery tonight.
Oh, is that right?
No, they made this, I guess, goofy trade with Brooklyn.
Okay.
And they wound up with a lottery pick.
Well, they're on their way up. Somebody's got to take on the Cavaliers.
That's right. Thanks, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. An 8-year-old Wisconsin boy and a police officer will soon share an unusual bond, a kidney. Lindsay Bidorf, a police deputy in Milton, Wisconsin, saw a Facebook plea for a kidney donor from the mother of Jackson Arneson, who was born with a chronic kidney condition. Last December, CBS News says mom Christy Gall wrote on her Facebook page, Jackson went in for a routine kidney appointment the end of November. At his appointment, labs showed that his kidney function is still decreasing. Doctors are in talks of activating him on the deceased donor list for a kidney transplant, but they said a living donor would be best. She worried, of course, the worried mother made a difficult request, and social media responded. Recently, mom Christy wrote, Jackson forever has his hero. Lindsay, I already feel so connected to you and have known you for just a day. We can't thank you enough for continuing Jackson's journey with us. The transplant is scheduled for next month. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.